Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is February 28th, 2011, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 186, podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, barista. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
That's right, everyone. I'd like to introduce our new replacement for Brian, the Brian Bot.
Yeah, the Brian Bot, who is hopped up on 5-hour energy and far too many shots of espresso this morning. So I apologize if I'm a lot manic.
And I'm just glad that I'm not the guy that has to put fresh batteries in you.
Yeah, you should be probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you have a good February?
Yeah, it seems like it was short. Oh, wait, that's because it's the shortest month of the year. That's just awesome. Did you have a good February?
Well, you know, February's pretty much over.
Yeah, pretty much. And, wow, we're actually doing a podcast in the month.
Yeah, we are doing a podcast. Yeah. Yeah, go us. Go us. Yeah. Go us. All right, well, we do actually have some things we want to talk about, so... Why don't we get to it?
That's just crazy talk.
I know, crazy talk.
Yeah, but what the hell? I'll do it anyhow.
Okay.
Apple's new MacBook Pros are out. The company seems to be opening up to security experts. It's annual shareholder meeting time again, and we're just days away from the second generation iPad introduction.
Apple updated the MacBook Pro last week for the first time in, 10 months, give or take a bit, and took... Wait a minute. Didn't we actually get a MacBook Pro update in a processor upgrade?
Yeah, but this is like the first really big update.
It is the first really big, but it's just, okay. We're going to get to all that in the context machine. But the point is it's the first, besides the processor upgrade that we saw in the fall, this is the first major upgrade in about 10 months. And they took the opportunity to introduce a new port called Thunderbolt with the laptops. The new 13-inch models include dual core Intel Core i5 processor cores, and the 15 and 17 inch models ship with a quad core i5 or i7 processor. All of the models received graphic cards upgrade. They come standard with 4 gigs of RAM. They include the above mentioned Thunderbolt port, in addition to the usual assortment of ports and features. And the laptops also include a built-in 720p camera. Apple is calling the FaceTime HD camera, for when you want to see someone's junk in HD on chat roulette. We're just saying. The new Thunderbolt connector uses the same mini display port previous. Sorry, folks. This timeout for Jeff's laugh was brought to you by Chat Roulette.
Oh, I'm so easy to entertain.
The new Thunderbolt connector uses the same mini display port previous MacBook Pro models use for external monitors and projectors, but Thunderbolt can also handle external hard drives and other devices with its 2 bidirectional 10 gigabit per second channels. For those of you who aren't into technobabble, that means Thunderbolt can push data faster than USB 2, FireWire 800, and eSATA combined. Combined, we say. Unfortunately, hard drives that support Thunderbolt won't be available until the summer, but the new MacBook Pros are available now.
And Apple has taken what we think is an unprecedented step on the security front by offering independent security researchers the opportunity to take a look at a preview release of macOS 10.7 and asking for their feedback on the upcoming release. Vocal Apple critic Charlie Miller and Dino Diazova, who co-authored the Mac Hacker's Handbook with Mr. Miller, both acknowledged that Apple had extended the invitation, and Mr. Miller offered praise for Apple opening up a little, saying, quote, "It's not hiring us to do pen tests of it, but at least it's not total isolation anymore, and at least security crosses their mind now," unquote.
Apple held its annual shareholder meeting last week, an event filled with only a couple of surprises. The first was that shareholders voted in a shareholder proposal to change Apple's bylaws to require a majority vote to elect members to the board of directors. This was a mild surprise in that Apple's management was against the measure. And let's be honest, Apple's management usually gets what Apple's management wants, at least when it comes to its shareholders. The second revelation was that Apple claims it can run the App Store just above break-even despite the 30% cut it takes on paid apps and soon subscriptions. There wasn't much else that could be properly construed as new information from the event, but Jeff and I thought we should discuss the meeting for those who have never been able to attend.
Apple is hosting another of its media events. This one is on March 2nd, where it will most likely introduce the next version of the iPad. The invitations the company sent out to the media hinted at the iPad theme by using an iCal-like calendar page with March and the number 2 on it, along with a tearaway that shows the corner of an iPad underneath. The event will be hosted at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. That's in San Francisco. And if you're lucky enough to have an invitation, the show starts at 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Okay, that sound means it's time for the Context Machine. This is where Jeff and I dove a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up right there.
Yep.
All right.
It's the Context Machine within the Context Machine.
An enigma wrapped in a burrito.
Yeah, or yeah, something. So let's talk about the new MacBook Pros that were introduced.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I actually think it's a nice upgrade. And I had a feeling that was the response you would have.
I am super excited about Thunderbolt.
I'm super excited about the way you say Thunderbolt.
Lightpeak is, it was, if you remember, folks, Thunderbolt. So Thunderbolt is what we were calling, or what Intel had codenamed Lightpeak. And so it's, you know, it's a completely new bus technology to the bus technology that could and should replace USB and FireWire.
Right. And if you have USB and FireWire devices that you want to use with your Thunderbolt port.
Thunderbolt.
The companies will be making adapters for those devices. Now,
right.
As it turns out, the MacBook Pros still have USB and FireWire on them, so you don't need to get adapters. But the point is, when the day comes that we don't have the USB and FireWire ports anymore, we won't be in a position where we have to throw away all of our old keyboards and mice and trackballs and hard drives and stuff.
You know, it's an interesting change for Apple to actually give us some options when it comes to moving to a new technology. You know, in the past, when, you know, with the iMac, of course, it was just instantly USB or nothing, and it was instantly no floppy drive. I don't know. I guess the video cards they've been using have both mini DisplayPort and DVI. So it's not entirely a change, but it is kind of a change. I mean, clearly Apple wants to move to Thunderbolt.
Right. And actually, you know, as I recall, back in the days of the black PowerBooks, so mm-hmm. The Lombard, Wall Street, and Pismo models.
Sure.
When Apple went to the Pismo model, which was the last version before the titanium MacBook or PowerBook came out, that computer, as I recall, had a mix of ports too. So it had a USB on it. I believe it still had a SCSI port.
No, it didn't have a SCSI port.
Yeah, it was like one of the small square SCSI ports, as I recall.
No, I refuse to remember that.
Okay. So speak, Brian, so shall it be.
I'm looking it up while you're talking.
Yeah, I think it had a mix of ports. And I'm trying to remember if it was the Wall Street or Lombard that had ADB and USB. Because I think there was one laptop where they had both of those ports too. But that was a long time ago.
I'm seeing at every Mac, I'm seeing that that it certainly had the USB. Did it have FireWire? I'm not seeing. Yeah, it did have FireWire. I think it was one of the first ones with FireWire, first the portables with FireWire. I'm not seeing SCSI, though.
Okay, so maybe that just says I'm getting old and just can't remember what was on a laptop that I had many, many years ago.
Yeah, maybe you're thinking of the Wall Street model.
I bet that's what I'm thinking of, which by chance is a model I never owned. Hmm. So, of course, that qualifies me to speak as an expert on the product.
Well, be that as it may, it is a nice change because, I mean, LightPeak / Thunderbolt, it just isn't ready for the market yet. Let me rephrase it. It might be ready for market, but the market's not ready for it yet. But, you know, at the same time, Apple's move to USB with the iMac just all but, you know, the market reacted by scrambling to bring USB stuff to market. And now I don't think there's going to be that same sort of scramble to bring Thunderbolt products to meet the MacBook Pro sales because, you know, USB and FireWire still work. So maybe this one will actually backfire. Maybe Apple's lack of flexibility in the past did force us to change all that much more swiftly.
Yeah, maybe. Well, see, I think this is just going to be an interim version of Thunderbolt because this is running on copper. It's not fiber optic. And I think that this is just like the first step in getting us where Apple and, well, Intel, since Intel did most of the work for LightPeak, where they want to get the market for the whole Thunderbolt thing. So I'm expecting that over the next few months, well, several months down the road at least, we'll probably start seeing the fiber optic version of Thunderbolt.
We can hope.
Yeah. Now the trade-off is with the copper-based version of Thunderbolt that we have today, you can actually run power over that bus. So you can run devices that aren't self-powered. Once it goes to fiber optic, every device that plugs into your Thunderbolt port will have to be self-powered.
Right. Interesting. So the reason why I was a bit meh on the update when you were kind of excited was simply because I think along with a lot of other people expected there to be more of the styling changes from the MacBook Air in this iteration of the MacBook Pro line. And we didn't really get anything. As a matter of fact, form factor-wise, this is all but exactly the same as the previous generation.
Yeah, the only physical difference that I could see was the inclusion of a Thunderbolt port.
Thunderbolt.
Yeah. Now, it may not have that the sexy change like the MacBook Air got. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, quad-core processors, plus you have much better video cards.
Yeah, that's certainly fantastic.
Yeah, and the performance that people are getting off of the new MacBook Pros is rivaling some of the Mac Pros. So there's a lot of horsepower in those machines. It doesn't have the sexy thing going for it. Well, I mean, I think it's a sexy looking machine because it looks like the last model.
It doesn't have the MacBook Air sexy factor,
right?
And, but it's still the sexiest pro level laptop on the market, in my opinion.
Yes, and I think it was a very nice upgrade. It just doesn't have the whiz-bang flash that I think people expect from every single Apple product upgrade now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And such expectations aren't all that reasonable because, you know, there's a lot of time and money that goes into each form factor design. And, you know, Apple, generally speaking, keeps those form factors for two and usually, I would say, three generations.
Except with the Mac Pro, where it's been the same form factor for a really long time now.
Yeah, but Apple doesn't care about the Mac Pro. and I would also add that I do not believe that we're going to see another iPhone styled like the iPhone 4. I think that Apple's going to ditch that form factor entirely.
That wouldn't surprise me.
But that's a topic for another day. But there was one thing that I heard expressed that surprised me, and that was almost disappointment that Apple included a CD and DVD drive.
And
the super drive.
See, that just baffles me that people would be disappointed with that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I do still... I definitely do not use my CD or DVD, my super drives. I don't use them very often, but there are times when I want them and then when I need them. And I'm in no hurry for Apple to make that change, even though I know it's inevitable.
Oh, sure. It's, you know, it's like the floppy drive went away at one point. No one's using SyQuest or Bernoulli drives anymore. Actually, if someone is, let me know.
SyQuest, wow.
That really kind of dates me, doesn't it?
Or how about the Jazz Hands drive?
Yeah, so the point
these
is...
These are not spirit fingers. These are spirit fingers. And these are gold. And yes, I did have a wide-eyed manic look on my face.
I'm glad because that's exactly how I pictured you. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that in the TMO Towers recording studios, the glass that's between the booths is actually reflective mirrors, so we can't see the other person.
it's true, and it's to cater to the narcissist in both of us.
Yeah, and my, I look fine today. I completely got sidetracked and don't. Super drives. Yes, you're right. It's inevitable that the super drives will go away because technology marches on. I'm glad they didn't go away this time around. And a MacBook Pro, in my mind, right now, without a super drive, is a very hobbled device.
Yeah, because there is still software being delivered on disk, including most of the Pro apps.
Yeah.
And, you know, including Apple's own Logic, including Apple's own Final Cut Pro, including, what else does Apple have that's disk only at this point?
How about Mac OS X? Well, yeah, except for developers right now for Lion.
Well, and doesn't the Air come with the boot USB drive?
It comes with the new MacBook Airs come with a little USB thumb drive, and that's
and at some point, I'm guessing that's what most even the big software apps will come with. And of course, Apple's going to be moving to deliver everything it can over the interwebs.
You know, I think it's a lot cheaper to produce DVDs and CDs than those little thumb drive sticks. So it wouldn't surprise me to see companies like Adobe and Adobe sticking with optical media for quite a while.
How many discs does Creative Studio take? The last time I checked, it was four or five.
Yeah, and that's DVDs, not CDs.
Right. And four, I think that you can make one thumb drive, one, you know, 20 gig, 30 gig thumb drive cheaper than you can make six DVDs, not to mention the packaging size and
okay, yeah, I didn't think about packaging size. Yeah, you know, although if I had to install Creative Suite over USB, I would probably claw my eyes out.
Yeah, fair enough. Wouldn't be bad over Lightpeak, though, or Thunderbolt.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be great over Thunderbolt. So, anyhow, I'm glad the optical drive is still there, even though there's a lot of people that are disappointed. And, yeah, sorry, gang.
All right, so I will give the new MacBook Pros the thumbs up on in terms of specs, and Thunderbolt to me is a really big deal, a really fantastic deal. I'm very excited about it. I give it a meh on the fact that I did want a slightly updated, or not slightly, I wanted an updated form factor. I wanted it to be even sexier than it is. And you, sir?
I am very pleased with the processors, so that gets some thumbs up for me. I'm very pleased with the new video cards, the AMD video cards that they're putting in the 15 and 17 inchers. I am very happy that there's still an optical drive and that we now have Thunderbolt. And I'm totally fine with the form factor staying just as it was.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So speaking of form factors and changes, meaning that I'm not speaking about that at all, I was definitely surprised when I saw the news that Apple had offered Charlie Miller and Dino Dizovi and other security experts that we don't know this preview look at Lion and actually ask for their feedback.
That is surprising. That's just not something that I've heard of Apple doing before.
No, to my knowledge, they never have. You know, normally, you know, I've always felt like Apple was even pissed about having to let developers look at hit preview releases.
Well, sometimes
I don't know that that's the effect. I mean, that's actually true, but I certainly have had that impression at times.
Well, there are times when it feels like Apple is really kind of annoyed that they have to let anyone mess around with the software they develop.
Yeah. That said, you know, you remember back in the day, before Steve came back, and even actually just as Steve came back, there was a closed beta program that Apple had for new versions of Mac OS.
Right.
And that went away, and effectively developers have become that closed data program, beta program, that is.
You know, I think that they should still have the closed beta program, although I think it should also include developers.
Why?
Well, okay, so having developers involved in playing around with the beta, like they are now, that's good because they can figure out what's going to break as far as application development goes.
But if you have their own apps, their own software.
Right, their own software. Now, if you have people that are not developers messing around with the software on a daily or very regular basis, those people are going to find a lot of the other things that you and I end up discovering after the product ships, where we become the public beta testers.
And that's true, of course. But of course, Apple has a lot less control over what people in the beta program may disclose. And that's, I think that's the biggest reason why they can that and why they move to using the developers as beta testers.
Okay. I can see that. Okay. Well, maybe they could make that one of the perks that's part of being the Apple Consultant Network.
Fair enough. I kind of like that idea, actually.
I mean, they have a little bit of sway over the people in that group, because if they start leaking information, then they'll lose early access to the software, and they can get booted out of the program.
Right. And it's not as if the developer community keeps all this stuff secret anyway.
Yeah, no kidding.
Be that as it may, there's another aspect of this. There's the fact that Apple is asking for anybody's feedback, but it's who they're asking feedback from that's important. The independent security culture out there, these are the guys that find the exploits, the exploitable security holes. These are the guys that find this stuff, who don't then turn around and develop exploits so that the spammers and the bad guys can put together botnets. And their opinions quite frankly, are important not from a from the standpoint of who they are, but what they know.
Right. And the fact that they discover these things and then don't exploit them is that's a big thing.
Yeah, it is a big thing. And these guys are really, really good at finding these problems. And as such, they should be, they certainly could be, a valuable asset for a company like Apple, and that actually, of course, includes a company like Microsoft or a company like Google, in finding problems and, you know, and finding Apple. I guess what I'm trying to say is, in my opinion, Apple should work more closely with these guys and not do what they've done in the past, which is to sort of, you know, these security researchers would let Apple know that there's a particular problem, and then Apple would basically not acknowledge that or say anything about it whatsoever until they finally released a solution, right? A security patch,
right? Which and, sometimes could be months after the security people found the flaw,
right? And if the security guys are finding it, that means the bad guys can find it. You know, and it, basically Apple wanted to control all the information there. And that was really frustrating to the security developers. And I actually, I think that it's not in our best interest. I actually think that Apple should A, move really, really quickly and be open about these things so that we all know what page we're on.
Yeah, I agree. Now, getting Apple to actually be open like that, well, good luck.
Right.
But the fact that they chose to approach people in the security community and ask them to take a look at what they're doing, that's
a huge step forward.
Yeah, that's a really big step.
It's a huge step forward. So I'm very pleased to see this. And was it John Martellaro this morning? That mentioned that asked in our
yes.
meeting. He asked our colleague John Martellaro we were discussing all this in our morning meeting today, and he noted that this may well be part of that new security head honcho that Apple brought on.
Right, that had worked with the Mozilla group.
Right, the Mozilla person. Right. So, yeah, it's definitely a good step forward one way or another, and hopefully Lion will benefit from it. And if Lion benefits from it, that means that we benefit from it.
And that's a good thing. I'm totally up for more secure operating system, more stable operating system, more efficient. Yeah, bring it on.
Yes. All right. So now, before we move on to the Apple shareholder meeting, we should mention our fantastic sponsor, Smile Software now.
Smile Software.
I wanted to call them by their old name, which we should mention anyway, which is Smile on My Mac. They changed their name last year to Smile Software, but they still make the same fantastic products for macOS 10 and iOS.
Yes, they do. And so...
What are we talking about today, though?
How about PDF Pen?
PDF Pen, a fantastic product.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about it? I know you have the most experience with it.
Okay. So PDF Pen is a great application for macOS 10 that lets you go in and manipulate PDF documents. And so you can go in and fill out forms. You can add signatures. You can combine documents, split them apart, and in some cases, you can even go in and change the text in a PDF. So very powerful, very easy to use. And in my opinion, if you're someone that needs to work with PDF all the time, instead of spending a small fortune on Adobe Acrobat, buy PDF Pen instead. It's a lot cheaper, and it's a lot easier to use.
Yeah, and I was you sort of headed me off at the pass, but I was going to say something to the effect of, well, hey, Jeff, why shouldn't I just use Acrobat? But you sort of nailed it. It's way easier to use, has a way better interface, and it's a fraction of the price. It's $59.95 as opposed to the hundreds of dollars that Acrobat costs.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I believe Acrobat's like $400.
At least that's what, yeah, if you're not getting it bundled with something else.
Right.
And so if it's easier to use, it has a smaller footprint, it's less of a resource hog, and you know, it has a better interface. So it's it's hands down, it's what I use when actually I use PDF Pen Pro, which is its sort of bigger brother. But this is definitely the product family that I use when I want to manipulate a PDF.
Oh,
and I know you do a lot of design stuff still, Jeff, and you end up having to manipulate a lot of PDFs. So what do you use?
PDF Pen. Well, actually, I use PDF Pen also, but yeah, it's. And I have Acrobat on my computer, but if I need to open a PDF and actually manipulate it, unless I'm doing something that really, really requires being in Acrobat, which typically doesn't happen at all, it's PDF Pen.
Yeah. And, you know, anyone listening to this, if you've used Acrobat, you know exactly what we mean when we call it a resource hog.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's like the number one reason I think to move to PDF Pen is because it is just so much. It's just such a better experience
and a fantastic price.
Yes, it is. All right, so check them out. We believe that we're going to have a PDF Pen on our special page, which is smilesoftware.com/AWR. We believe that that's going to be there. Hopefully it will be, but nonetheless, just go check it out at smilesoftware.com.
Right. You'll be glad you did.
You will. You will. All right. So now I was able to go to the shareholder meeting.
That's right. Which that's one of the benefits of owning shares in Apple.
Yes, it is. It is. And yeah, it is. And I do have a very tiny, 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 tiny holding in Apple. They actually let members of the press in too, but I'd be there anyway. Be that as it may, the thing that, you know, Apple keeps a pretty tight lid on the shareholder meetings. You know, you can't take computers in, you can't take iPads in. They used to not let you take iPhones in, believe it or not.
Wow.
But they didn't seem to be pulling iPhones this time around, which is interesting because, of course, you can record with an iPhone, you can take pictures with an iPhone. So why can't I bloody well take an iPad or a MacBook Pro in?
Yeah, I mean, at least an iPad, because for now, you can't take photos with one.
Right, I know, but I could take better. Anyway, my penmanship is atrocious, so yeah, I was forced to take notes and then actually have to read my own writing, which is punishment. punishment extraordinaire. But the dirty little secret of Apple shareholder meetings is that not much happens. You know, almost everything that comes out in the shareholder meetings is information that has come out over the last year in Apple's quarterly conference calls. And you do sometimes get slightly more candid responses from especially from Steve Jobs. If Steve Jobs is there and he's answering questions from a shareholder, he still isn't going to say anything that he doesn't want the whole world to know, but he will be at least pretty candid when someone is questioning, say, Apple's business practices or something like that.
Sure, but
which is nice. And he wasn't there this time. As we all know, he's on a medical leave of absence. And some people were wondering whether or not he would be. I personally had no doubt that he would not be.
I would have been stunned had he shown up.
Right. So instead, we had Apple's COO, Tim Cook. Or Time Cook, as I keep trying to type it whenever I type his name. Apple CFO Peter Oppenheimer and Apple Vice President of Marketing or Executive Vice President Phil Schiller. And then Scott Forstall was there. Scott actually handled a couple of iPhone questions too. But he wasn't on stage. He just ended up answering some questions.
Now, I picture these events, and keep in mind, I've never been to a shareholder meeting, but I picture these events as a thing that runs almost like a user group meeting.
No, it's very organized. There's a chairman, you know, everything has got to be moved and seconded. So there's basically two different phases. There's three different phases. There's the introductions. There is the the official vote, which, you know, usually by the time the shareholder meetings happen, the votes are irrelevant because proxy voting has already decided the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have the question and answer session, which at Apple shareholder meetings often includes fanboy questions, not shareholder questions.
Oh, sure.
Because a lot of Apple shareholders are fans of Apple. And, you know, in the past, there's been, you know, questions like, well, why can't Apple, you know, when are you going to release this product or that product? Those sorts of questions, which, of course, you know, always gets met with precisely the sort of, we don't talk about unannounced products.
Right.
Even to our shareholders, followed by a verbal ish, or a metaphorical ish. metaphorical, I guess. And we didn't really have a whole lot of that this time. But I guess, so let's go. There were two shareholder proposals. Now, we did cover this at the Mac Observer. There were two shareholder proposals, one of which was basically requesting slash, you know, making it so that Apple had to reveal its succession plan for the CEO position. And this obviously is in light of the concerns about Steve Jobs' health.
Right.
And they weren't trying to – this was basically put to get – the proposal itself was backed by a pension fund, and that pension fund was one of the funds used by a labor union. And they didn't want Apple to say who it is they were going to put in place. They just basically wanted Apple to publicly explain what the process was going to be like, you know, exactly how are you going to replace the CEO? And the reason why this is an issue, you know, that might kind of sound like a no-brainer to people, but Apple has been very, very secretive about Steve Jobs' health. You know, the first time when he had his pancreatic cancer operation, mm-hmm. we didn't even find out about it until, what, 6 months later? 3 months later, something like that?
Yeah, it was definitely after the fact.
It was way after the fact. And, you know, and then plus, you know, there was the whole business with when Steve Jobs was obviously getting sick, and it's like, well, it's just a hormone imbalance, and you know, oops, I'm going to take a six-month leave of absence, and we come to find out that he had a kidney operation, things like that. There is...
Was it kidney or liver?
Liver, thank you. Liver.
Okay.
Forgive me. You've got concern with institutional shareholders who basically want to know that Apple's got a plan in place, isn't sticking its head in the sand when it comes to its top position. And that's where all of this comes from. But shareholders rejected that measure. It was a measure that Apple's management said asked them to resist, and they did. They rejected it.
You know,
rejected by a wide margin, I might add.
I would be very surprised if a company like Apple hasn't had a succession plan worked out for a long, long time. And they may not have names for the different positions, but they know exactly what they're going to do.
Well, that's true, Jeff, but there's a lot of companies, a lot of large companies make these plans public. And there's something to be said. The thing about Apple is that I don't think there's any other company on the face of the planet right now that's whose fortunes are not as closely tied to its head honcho as Apple is because of the impact that Steve Jobs has had on Apple.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. The fact that Steve Jobs has rock star status, and the fact that the company's fortunes seem to be directly tied to him, whether that's true or not, I can totally get why shareholders would push to have more transparency in the succession plan.
Well, what is not even debatable is that Steve Jobs, part of the value placed in Apple, the stock, is because of Steve Jobs.
Oh, sure.
That's beyond debate, and therefore that's why customers, you know, a lot of again, I'm trying to explain this. I'm not trying to attack anyone out there who may for whom this may be appropriate, but a lot of people feel like Steve Jobs' health should be a private thing because they care about Steve Jobs as a person. And that is very true, except for the fact that saying that Steve Jobs' health is a private issue would be akin to saying that, a senator, maybe the president of the United States, saying that his health is a private matter. It's not. It's actually a matter for us as voters and citizens of the United States of America. It's something that we actually have a right to know. As shareholders in Apple Incorporated, shareholders have a right to know. Of course, Apple can't just let shareholders know. They kind of have to let the world know. And this is one of those things where Steve Jobs doesn't necessarily get to have his privacy. You know,
yes.
A lot of his own wealth is made up of Apple shares, and those shares are worth as much as they are, in part because of his contributions to Apple.
So then the trick is finding where do you draw the line between what's appropriate to share and
right.
and maintaining some modicum of privacy.
Right. Yeah. It's I wouldn't want to try to walk that balance.
No,
as a person, I totally understand Steve wanting to keep his health concerns between him and his family.
Sure.
I just also happen to believe that shareholders have a right to know too. And this is one of those things where I think Steve's wishes get trumped. But in this case, Steve's wishes are not necessarily trumped, at least not when it comes to the succession plan.
It's interesting how votes like that work out, I think.
Because the other vote, Apple also resisted, but shareholders voted it in with a wide majority.
Yeah. Now, not being a shareholder, I guess it doesn't matter if I'm a shareholder or not. I can't remember what the typical voting pattern is, but it seems to me that usually the votes that Apple wants, that's the way things go.
Yeah, that is true. Of course, Steve himself owns a lot of shares, but he doesn't. It's actually a very small percentage of the company. I want to say, and everybody's welcome to write in, yell at me, and call me an idiot. But I think he still has 10 million shares at this point. It might be a few more, but 10 million shares out of 900 million shares is obviously not a big percentage. For most companies, so when a company is doing well and company's management wants shareholders to vote this way or that way on shareholder proposals, usually those votes go the way the company's management wants. If a company is not doing well, if a company is having a lot of problems, shareholders are obviously a lot more likely to vote against the company's wishes. And of course, Apple's been doing so well for so long. Generally speaking, what Apple's management wants, it gets.
Yeah, and it's a very dynamic company, very dynamic leaders. So, yeah, I can see where it'd be very easy for them to sway votes the way they want.
Yeah, people. Yeah, exactly. And there was enough noise from the institution. Institutional investors tend to have the most say, because they vote in large blocks, and a lot of times institutional investors might own a significant stake in any given company, if not even a majority stake, if you take all the institutional investors together. And so what those institutional investors want is something that Apple definitely has to pay attention to. And it was institutional investors who have been pushing both of these plans, both the shareholder succession plan and the measure that did pass, which was requiring that board members be elected with a majority vote.
Okay. So tell me more about what the dynamics are like at shareholder meetings.
Well, so you got the introduction from whoever's chairing the meeting, and that's super dry, super boring. And then you have the mechanics of the votes taking place, and it is such a it's part ritual, part waste of time, because again, most of the votes have already been decided. As a matter of fact, What they do is they'll say, you know, and anyone who hasn't already voted gets a ballot. And to which, you know, you sign your name and everything and put how many votes you might own. And you mark how you want each of the various issues that are up for the decision. So that'll usually include all or some of the members of the board of directors. It'll include, like, one of the things that Apple had was verifying Ernst & Young as their accountants, and also asking for how shareholders wanted an advisory committee to what kind of role they wanted that committee to have on executive compensation, right? So those are all, you know, just really, you know, kind of decisions. And then you had the two shareholder proposals, and they go down each of them and discuss them and then open them up for discussion. In this particular case, there was almost no discussion. The only kind of discussion from anyone on hand was from the shareholder representing the two shareholder proposals.
Okay.
Right. So there was almost no, I don't actually remember much of anything. Shelton Ehrlich did not come up and rant about any kind of environmental stuff because environmental stuff wasn't on the ballot.
I'm kind of disappointed because
I was a little bit too. I'm going to be honest. I tried to get an over under bet going on how many times he would make a fist, but I couldn't even see him because I wasn't in the main room.
See, a shareholder meeting without him would just feel like something's missing,
and something was. Something was missing. So after we go through each proposal and the chairman asks asks for discussion from any shareholders, then they actually announce what the votes are, even though we just voted. And again, that's because most votes actually take place beforehand in the form of a proxy vote.
Right. So they already know what the outcome is before the people that are actually at the meeting cast a vote.
Yeah, because and the only time – and it's announced as a preliminary vote, but the preliminary vote is almost always the way – you know, like it is always the way it's going to be. The only thing that will change afterwards is the actual numbers, which they then tally and release after the meeting.
Sure. I'm sure they have to go through and verify that the people that are voting have the stocks that they say they do. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So then you get the question and answer session, and that's where whoever is on hand to take questions is sitting on the stage, and shareholders line up at a microphone and ask their questions, some of which are painful, some of which are vaguely interesting, and other of which are boring. Mm-hmm. In the past, for instance, there was, you know, a lot of agitation on Apple becoming greener, but of course Apple has made great strides in part because of shareholder involvement on the green front. The last question they took this time, or maybe it was the second to the last question, was a really painful question from a woman who was interested in promoting The Ecstasy and Agony of Steve Jobs, which is a play being done by
Oh, right. That's in the Bay Area somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in San Francisco right now. And she was asking them if they'd seen the play. And ostensibly, of course, that was to ask what they thought about the charges in the play, which are that worker conditions are terrible in China. Mm-hmm. And then Tim Cook spoke on that, but then she kept asking about the play. And so, are you going to see the play? Are you interested in seeing the play? Have you seen the play? Are you going to see the play? So it was clearly she was just interested in promoting the play, and it was really annoying and really painful to listen to.
Wow.
And in this particular meeting, there just weren't a lot of really interesting questions from shareholders.
Okay, so a dry meeting all the way around. I'm assuming
it was pretty dry.
And I'm assuming no punch and pie?
Punch and pie?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, refreshments for everyone.
No, there was no punch, no pie. Oh, no, well, that's not true. What am I saying? There was coffee, there was water. There may have been some juice. There were definitely bagels and breakfast pastries out for us.
Okay, well, there you go. And someone out there is chuckling because they got my punch and pie reference.
And I don't get it. What's it from?
It's from South Park.
Oh. I'm embarrassed.
That's all right. I'll let you slide.
I'm embarrassed. I
mean, yeah, but with your encyclopedic knowledge of Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
uh-huh,
I'm assuming that there just simply isn't enough data storage space in your head to remember Cartman quotes from South Park.
No, but I can describe Willow's look when she tastes Buffy's punch, where Buffy's lemonade that she didn't add sugar to.
Okay, now actually, I've seen that episode, so there you go.
Such a funny scene.
Yes, it is.
All right, well, like we're sitting at 50 minutes plus the intro. My question to you is: do you want to talk briefly about Wednesday's iPad 2 event?
Yeah, we should probably take just a couple minutes, but I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on it.
No, because we should do another show. We will do another show afterwards.
Right.
And we don't actually, we think we don't mean at the end of March.
It's just crazy talk, but it might happen.
It could. So Apple is on Tuesday. They're obviously announcing the iPad 2. That was a vaguely interesting thing from the meeting. Is someone was a shareholder was asking about the stupid rumor that the iPhone and iPad 2 had been delayed. That was the manipulator rumor.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And Tim actually was a little bit on a roll. He made several jokes, and this was one of them, where he said, well, you might want to, when you get home, you can fire up a browser. I can't do a Tim Cook accent, but he has such a delightful cadence. He was telling the shareholder to fire up a browser and check out the stories about Apple's invitations, and said that she might get a clue about whether or not the iPad 2 is going to be delayed.
Nice.
And he wasn't rude, if that sounded rude.
Okay, so got it now. So done in a very nice way.
Yeah, and everybody was laughing. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. All right. So I'm expecting that the rumors that the iPad's going to have a carbon fiber body are wrong, that it will continue with unibody metal.
Yeah, I think that we'll see another generation with this current form factor that will just be thinner and cooler. Lighter.
Yeah, I don't even know if it'll be thinner. I don't know.
I think that they will try to make it thinner, because they're going to be trying to make it lighter, and thinner and lighter usually go hand in hand.
Yeah, that's true. I'll give you that. And of course, there has to be a front-facing camera so that you can do FaceTime with it.
Yep. I personally don't think there will be a rear-facing camera, but
I would be very surprised if there's a rear-facing camera.
I think that HP was talking about, you know, they couldn't imagine anyone holding a tablet up to take pictures, and I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just silly and crazy. Maybe you want to stick the thing on a tripod and shoot that way or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, Apple's always been really good with giving us what we really want and not what we say we want.
It's like Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon gives us what we need, not what we want.
There you go. Yeah. So I don't expect to see an SD card slot on the new iPad. I don't expect to see a standard USB port.
I don't either.
And
I don't either. I think they'll continue to do dock.
I agree. And I don't think we'll see a higher resolution display either.
Ooh, I don't know about that one. We could. I mean, why wouldn't Apple bring the Retina display over if they can?
Oh, see, that's it. If they can. And my Jedi instincts are telling me they can't yet. Now, of course, they made up the term Retina display. So they could put a display in there that does have a higher resolution, not as high resolution as the iPhone, and say, hey, look, Retina display. So they could do that. But I'm thinking that the display will be the same that's in the first generation iPad.
Maybe. You could definitely be right, but then what is it that they're doing with this thing to make it bigger, badder, to make us want to buy it.
I think it's all going to be on the inside pretty much.
So faster processor?
Faster processor, more RAM, not more storage, but more RAM, because right now it has, I think, 256 megs. I think they'll take it up to 512 or maybe even higher. And
well, I think it'll also have higher storage.
Yeah, maybe.
I think we'll see a 32, 64, and 128 meg or gig, I mean.
Okay, that's a possibility. I mean, there's definitely room inside for 128 gig.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we also saw at least one analyst saying that that Apple would be doing the Wi-Fi plus 3G version would actually be GSM and CDMA capable, so it's one device for most of the world's networks.
I think that's a very real possibility also.
Yeah, it seems like they would do that for a number of reasons. A, because they can. Qualcomm is making a chip that'll do both, and that allows them to have one device for both Verizon and AT&T in the United States, and it covers them in most of the global markets as well. And from an inventory management standpoint, that would be good and beneficial for Apple.
Sure, sure. So it sounds like we have a lot in common with what we think will happen with the next iPad, and some very big differences as well.
Yeah, I think we'll be thinner and lighter. I think that we'll be that we may have a better display, but I'm not going to place a bet on that one.
Fair enough. And honestly, when I place bets on what's going to be in a product, you can assume immediately that what I said is wrong, and that it never fails. When I place a bet on what Apple's going to do with a product, that's exactly what doesn't happen.
Fine.
So I'm not going to bet, and hopefully that means the things that I'm speculating on will come true, because of course that's how it really works.
Yes, exactly. And on that happy note, why don't you take us out?
Oh, yeah, I can totally do that. All right. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrian. It's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Thank you.